Hey everybody, Daniel Gregory. Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of The Perceptive Photographer. Over the past several months, I've been working with a number of photographers on some of their projects where they're pulling together work that they've been shooting for a number of months or a number of years that they're finally collecting into that final project that they want to put together. Kind of the last set part of that is really that editing and sequencing portion. And by editing, I don't mean the editing in Photoshop or in the darkroom, but really the selection of the images and then the pulling together of those images into the body of work, and then ultimately the sequencing or the order in which those images are presented. And it's in that sequencing where I think a lot of people struggle to really get a good story told and to really convey a lot of the meaning they're hoping to tell in the way they want to communicate it. So this week I thought we'd kind of dive in and talk a little bit about sequencing, some of the things you should consider when you're sequencing your work, some of the pitfalls, and really what you can do to kind of set yourself up to be the most successful in that process. Well, the first thing I think we have to think about is really the difference in kind of how that sequencing can be done. And we generally break that down into two areas. We have a photo story and we have a photo essay, and they kind of blur together a little bit in the middle, but they're different. And I think really understanding the difference between those two is important, as well as ultimately where your project's going to live. And we'll talk about that in a second. But if we think about a photo story, I like to think of those more as the classic story that we might see in a magazine, and it tells the story kind of from beginning to end. We have the opening shot, which kind of establishes where we're at. There's a middle shot, then we might get a close-up of some detail work. We then get a photograph of the key action, and then there's an ending or a closing shot, which kind of summarizes the process or the project or the location or the trip or whatever you're on. So those images kind of become the way the story's told. It's pretty much told from beginning to end. And what's more important in here is that we don't find necessarily the strongest photographic image, but we find the image that best suits the need of the story. And what I mean by that is we may have a close-up shot that's a better close-up to explain something from the writing in the story or from the context of the story. It may not be the strongest composition, but we take that shot because it works best in relation to the story. For the photo essay, we really want the strongest photographs possible. And I always encourage people to try to work in the photo essay model because really strong photography can carry so much weight and can be so effective at moving a project forward. It also does such a great job in the supporting text and concepts that are around those photographs. You don't ever have to worry about a weak photograph dragging down a particular project. So really trying to get in and make sure that every photograph is strong and stands on its own 2 feet is kind of the cornerstone, I think, of the photo story essay. And that's really where I encourage people to think about their work. Strong images that should be considered for the body of work, you have to be ruthless in this process. And you really have to take a look at, I think, three kind of big areas: your composition, including your technical aspects, the meaning of the work, and then the ultimate intention of that work against the broader body that you're creating of the project or the broader structure you're creating for the project. If a photograph doesn't have really strong composition and technique, it's going to become a distraction for the viewer when they're ultimately looking at the project. So we have to eliminate that as a variable. We want to make sure that it stays strong and that the composition is such that it holds and engages the viewer. It helps them better understand the image. And so all of those components come into play. And you have to be, like I said, ruthless about this. So any little distraction needs to be considered a case for removing that from the editing process. It needs to be taken out if there's something with the photograph that doesn't elevate it to the level of a truly great photograph. Because ultimately, you want to have the strongest photographs possible. This is an area where if you are struggling with this on your own, you've got to find somebody else to help you. Because those people are going to be more ruthless than you are because they don't have any of that context. We've talked about that in prior podcasts. They don't have any memory associated with the photograph. So they just look at it and think it's a boring photograph, or compositionally, you know, these lines distract me, or you have this white sphere in the background where the highlights are kind of blown out and the light back there is a real distraction away from what's going on in the foreground of the image. And it's not that strong compositionally. Also, when you think about editing for meaning, what really are you trying to convey through the project? What is the broader message you're trying to communicate? And does this photograph really do that? Is this strong to that meaning? Does it push the project forward? Does it push the understanding the viewer will have about your project forward? And finally, how does it sit with the intention? Does it really convey your position that you're taking about the project? Because ultimately, you're going to take a position about the project, whether you know it or not, subconsciously or consciously. And does it convey that? Do you get that sense of that piece moving forward? If you have all of that and you've got these really strong photographs, they then have to go in order. So we come to that second part, really understanding what you're doing with that work is critical. If you're doing work for a gallery wall or for a book or for a video slideshow, those are all going to require different editing sequences. They're going to require to be laid out differently. It's one of the things I think is really important if you're thinking about a magazine layout or how your images are going to be used, what order they're going to go in. Because if you have the ability to control that, which you don't always have, because you may not necessarily know how a gallery is going to lay out the work or how a magazine is potentially going to use the work. But if you've got the option to control that, what you really want to do is start to look at how do images relate to one another and how do they ultimately evolve into the completed project. When images are set side by side, they're able to pair up together and become, you know, partners in some way. So the composition of one can push into the composition of the second image. They can actually push against one another. They can become informative of each other. They might move by time of day. They might move by color. They might move by the use of leading line. Something within the compositional elements helps the photographs relate. Using those elements to start to pair photographs together makes the images stronger together than they are as individual images. And you slowly start with kind of two that fit together, and then you build from there. So then you put three together, you put four together. And this is one of the areas where I encourage people to have a lot of small photographs that they can rearrange and put in front of them. Because as you're moving photographs around, you can start to see how, wow, if those two photographs are side by side, they really pair well together. But if they're pulled apart, they don't. And what I'm looking for in those photographs is, do they enhance the sense of space? Do they enhance the sense of place about the project and about the photographs? Do they enhance the sense of purpose, personality of the subjects within the frame? Do I get a better sense of the perception of what's going on around the objects? Do I get a better sense of the idea that's trying to be communicated? Are those pieces and elements moving forward? When photographs don't work side by side, you'll have a visceral feeling inside of you. You'll realize like, wow, those photographs just don't fit together. And you may not initially be able to articulate why those photographs don't work, but over time you'll start to be able to say, well, they don't really relate because of a compositional element or because of an intention and meaning or because they look too similar and I feel like I'm seeing the exact same photograph over and over again. You know, one of the benefits we have in cinema is when we put photographs side by side, we call those scenes. So we have motion pictures that are moving, and when we want to move from one scene to another, we have transitions that can be in there. We can fade to black. We can dissolve. We can do a jump cut. We can do a lot of different things to help move the viewer from one scene to the next. Well, in a photographic context where we're looking at still images, we don't have those transitions. I can't fade to black. I can't overlap things together and dissolve from one to another. I have to just rely on the actual images themselves. So it's really important that you take a look at how do they move from one to the other. One of the things that I like to do with that work is I like to pick up all the images and I like to lay them out. And then I like to kind of group them together so I can figure out at a high level, what am I seeing from point A to point B? Once those photographs have kind of been loosely grouped, and I'm not really militant about it, and I'm not trying to get like, oh, these are all the ones that have somebody in the left side of the frame. But if I'm shooting people, you know, these people kind of fit together, or this location kind of fits together, or these are all kind of more wide angle architecture. These are all more close-up shots. If I'm doing, like I said, portraiture work, these have similar expressions. And then as I'm looking at those photographs, I'm trying to go in and now I've kind of got a group. I'm going to try to pull out the strongest photograph from each one of those sets and push those forward to the edge of the table. Now I don't take those other photos away because sometimes as photos start to get paired and sequenced, we can find a stronger photo in the piles below, because we're getting more clarity about what is compelling within the essay we're trying to tell. What actually is making for a stronger photograph as we start to see photographs laid out side by side. So you don't ever want to remove those pieces. I kind of have a not pile, which is almost a no pile. Then I have the maybe pile, the working pile, and kind of the hot pile, which is the actual sequence I'm working on. But those piles always come out and they always get intermingled and they always get moved around and used over and over again. When we group those things together, we give the brain less stuff to process from a pattern recognition standpoint. We also allow ourselves to start to see how much we are repeating the same thing, because one of the things that happens a lot in sequencing is the same image may appear over and over again, and we ultimately don't want to do that. We don't want to have the same image And by that, I don't mean the exact same image, but what I mean are images that are so similar that we start to think we've seen these before, and then it becomes kind of repetitive, and we don't want the work to seem repetitive because the viewer might then check out from the work. That's one of the reasons I like to have those piles there, is I can kind of push and pull and move those things out so that I can make sure as I'm sequencing, I'm getting the right images there. The other thing to do is once you've kind of sequenced, is start to pull out images that aren't that strong, because you've got to be able to take away to really increase. And eventually you get to the point where you feel like, well, now I'm not telling the story I want. If I take that photograph out, it's no longer saying what I want it to say. It's no longer conveying the meaning that I'm looking for. And sometimes that means you're giving up your strongest or your favorite image. Giving up your favorite image from your body of work is something that you're sometimes going to have to do because it's not the right image for the story you're attempting to tell. So being willing to take that off the table is something that's so critical to actually getting what you really want by doing the hard cut. So that's something you really have to get good at. In sequencing, like I said, there's a number of ways you can actually sequence. You can sequence by shape, color, movement, meaning. All those are fine. But one of the pieces that I really think is important there too is that you want to create a sense of energy and movement. And you think about how stories are told, that they sometimes go faster, they sometimes go slower, and you kind of want to move forward and backwards. And so as you're editing and sequencing, you're kind of thinking about pace and like, how fast is this going to happen? How long should somebody look at this image? Should this image kind of create some tension to move them to the next one more quickly? Should this one try to create a sense of lingering a little bit more? Should this image try to invoke memory of an image they might have looked at 6-8 pages ago if they're looking through a book? So how do all those pieces kind of come into play? And you've got to start to think about that. That's why understanding if you're on a gallery, if you're in a book, if you're going into a magazine, if you're doing a slideshow is so important, because understanding how all those pieces fit together is going to inform a lot is going to inform you a lot about how to actually edit and sequence and how many pieces to put in there and the order to go in. You know, you're never in complete control of what the viewer is going to do and how they're going to respond to your work, but you can definitely make sure that your understanding of your intention and meaning is in there. So the images you lead in with, the images towards the middle and the images toward the end are all critical in making sure that you start and end with the right concept so that somebody doesn't inadvertently leave your work thinking you believe one thing when you actually believe the other, just based on the sequence you went in. So that's why always a beginning to end, start to finish, morning to night sequencing may not be the right thing in an essay. And because they're just strong images, you can really sequence those images in any way you want, you know, whether it's, like I said, in the shape, movement, color, things like that. So really getting that strongest essay, that strongest way of telling that story is kind of one of the most important pieces. So I hope I've given you a little bit to think about editing and sequencing. It's such a difficult process. It's one of the hardest processes, I think, for people to get their head around. And really, it's something I think is best done if you can get a couple of people to help you out, because they're going to see things in the work that you can't. So if you don't have somebody for that, you know, find somebody in your local photo club, find somebody in your area, find another artist. They don't have to be a photographer. But just find somebody who can give you some really objective feedback about how to put those photographs in order and what sequence they should be and how they're relating to what you've already created. It bears repeating for, I think, the fourth time now. You've just got to be so hard on yourself about getting really strong images in there, because you don't want to have 11 really great images and one not great image and have people think, God, it was really great, except that one image, I just really didn't get why it fit in there. I didn't understand it. And that really became such a strong distraction from the work. You don't want to leave people with that impression. So you really want to take a step back and make sure you get that really strong body of work by not shortchanging yourself that way. Have a great week behind the camera. You can always find us on the web at www.theperceptivephotographer.com or check us out on iTunes. I hope you have a great week.